You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people, the places, and the politics of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. You probably have a ballot that you got in the mail on your kitchen counter or dining room table. Maybe you've already tended to it, maybe not. You have until Tuesday, November 8th, for Election 2022. Phil, roll the music. Out of 15 council districts in the city of Los Angeles, a full third of them are right now up for grabs. Four of them in November and one of them coming up in April because Nuri Martinez resigned in disgrace in the wake of the racist backroom recording. So we are going to dig into the races on the ballot in less than 2 weeks, and voters in districts 5, 11, 13, and 15 have a lot on their minds. We're going to go through each of those districts one by one with some of the smartest people around when it comes to L.A. politics. And we're going to hear from people in each of those districts as well. John Rigardi is writer for Los Angeles Magazine. He's been reporting on the local city council races. Hi, John.
Hey, Steve.
And Julia Wick is a Metro reporter for the L.A. Times. She's been keeping tabs on many of them as well. Hi, Julia.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with District 5. This is the district right now occupied by Paul Koretz, who's running for city controller. And the two candidates vying are Katie Young Yaroslavsky and Sam Yebri. Julia, let's turn to that council race. Covers parts of West L.A., Bel Air, parts of Hancock Park. Yaroslavsky is a daughter-in-law of Zev Yaroslavsky, longtime L.A. politico who represented that same district for decades. She almost avoided this runoff back in June, nabbing about 48% of the vote in the primaries. Tell us about each candidate.
Yeah, so this is an interesting race. Like a lot of the city races, it is focused pretty intensely on homelessness and public safety. This is also, so Paul Koretz, who's terming out, has been in office for three terms. So this will be the first new representative this district has had in over a decade. So whoever it is will represent a pretty big change for the district, even if they're, you know, somewhat in line politically. And in terms of homelessness and public safety, on homelessness, broadly speaking, both candidates have said they'd prioritize prevention with strategies to prevent tenants from falling into homelessness and create more affordable housing, work to get people off the streets faster. The biggest kind of difference on their homelessness policy, and this is a small difference, is that they've both said they would have voted to pass 4118. The city's anti-camping ordinance, and probably the only ordinance that most Angelenos know by its numbers. But Yaroslavsky has framed it as something that should be employed as a real strategy of last resort, whereas Yebri has said anti-camping ordinances should be used pretty robustly. They're both attorneys, both in their early 40s, both grew up for part of their lives in the district. Yaroslavsky has worked as an environmental and land use attorney and most recently spent quite a few years working for Sheila Kuehl, the supervisor. And Yebri has been on a couple of city commissions, has done pro bono work with Bates Zedek representing tenants, and has his own small law firm in Century City.
Let's move on over to District 11 now. This is Councilmember Mike Bonin's seat. It'll be a matchup between Tracy Park and Aaron Darling. Bonin, of course, was at the center of the recently leaked audio scandal over at City Hall. His son was targeted by some really racist comments in the tape. Beyond that, though, Bonin had become a really divisive figure in his district, mostly because of homelessness, because of his handling of homeless encampments. Let's hear from some of the folks inside District 11.
There's no easy answer. I don't think any of the candidates are going to do anything about the homeless problem, like, overnight, for sure. It's a long-term problem, probably, and I don't think anyone has the perfect solution.
I feel mixed about the situation because I'm Black and I'm also Hispanic, so I'm hoping that whoever does get elected in has more of a plan for the Black community and the Hispanic community.
That's Rick Egusquiza and Erica Walker talking from District 11. So let's talk about the two candidates in the race, Park and Darling, because they really represent the two sides of that division, right? Start with Tracy Park, John.
Well, actually, I think, Steve, what we almost want to do is look at them together, because in this race, like in some other races, this is almost a case of what I like to call left and lefter. In almost every single city council district in Los Angeles, we're talking about, you know, strict Democrats. Tracy Park is more of a centrist Democrat. Erin Darling, who is running against her, is a much more progressive, even further left-wing Democrat. We've seen this borne out in other races. So Erin Darling has actually been, you know, has been very closely aligned and has been, you know, compared to Mike Bonin. Some have even referred to him as Bonin 2.0, something which he has sought to, differentiate himself from. But, you know, again, both of these two are attorneys, as in the previous race that Julia described. Tracy Park has been, said she would be a little more forceful on addressing homelessness than Erin Darling is. But this race, Steve, has gotten really nasty. They have really gone after each other.
All right, let's move then into District 13. Current council member Mitch O'Farrell facing off against Hugo Soto Martinez. This district runs from Hollywood to Echo Park. Let's hear from Constance Franklin and Daniel Cook. They're two constituents in District 13. Constance Franklin saying she's upset with what happened at Echo Park vis-a-vis the homeless issue and the encampment there and the fence going up in District 13. Let's hear from Constance Franklin and Daniel Cook after that.
I am very concerned about that Hugo Soto Martinez, because ever since this fence has gone up of Echo Park, the people here, we have peace.
I'm voting for Hugo. He seems to be the best possible candidate for District 13. His ethics are sound, his morals are good, he's kind. All things that Mitch performs, but isn't, obviously, in policy.
Julia Wick, tell us a little bit more about Hugo Soto Martinez.
So this race really kind of gets into that same left versus lefter dynamic John was talking about in CD 11. Hugo Soto Martinez was a longtime organizer with Unite Here Local 11, the Hotel Workers Union. He's been really politically engaged through that work. Grew up, I believe, in South LA and now lives in Hollywood or East Hollywood. And he is really closely aligned with this kind of new progressive movement that has built a lot of power in the last 2 years, sort of beginning, or at least beginning kind of on the grand scale with Councilmember Nithya Raman's election in 2020. She unseated an incumbent council member, which is a very big deal when that happens. And Soto Martinez is closely allied with her. He's a really close political ally of A. Eunices Hernandez, who unseated Gil Cedillo in CD1 in June. He's backed by Democratic Socialists of America, some other grassroots groups like Ground Game LA, et cetera, and is really quite a bit to the left of incumbent council member Mitch O'Farrell in a couple of respects. And that race is going to be a really interesting test. This movement has obviously built a lot of power, but right now their members only make up a fraction of the council. Should, say, Darling win and Soto Martinez win, you then have a real kind of block on the council of these new progressives.
So what's his issue? What is he running on?
He is running on a really sharp critique of how O'Farrell handled homelessness, particularly around the Echo Park clearing and the police response there. He advocates much stronger renter protections, decreased police spending, doesn't want to see more police officers added to LAPD. Those are kind of some of the big differences. And I should say, O'Farrell has also advocated for tenant protections. And the kind of interesting divide here is, you know, a council member like O'Farrell would also describe themselves as a progressive. It's just a kind of shifting yardstick of what that means in the context of the city of LA right now.
Was it a surprise that O'Farrell actually got the lesser amount of votes in the primary?
Absolutely. I think Soto Martinez finished with something like 9% ahead of O'Farrell in a pretty crowded field. And that is absolutely a big deal. The kind of metaphor I like to use for how rare it is how rare it historically had been to unseat an incumbent in LA is that it's a little bit like snow in Los Angeles. It's something that happens, but it is rare enough that, you know, everyone's calling their friends and stopping on the side of the road to take pictures and really is kind of seen as a sort of extraordinary action. And so we've now had Raman in 2020, Hernandez in June 2022, and potentially a third, it's possible if O'Farrell is unseated, that would be three people in 2 years, which would just kind of represent a real upending of LA politics as we had known it. But very quickly, I think a lot of this also has to do with the change in the election cycle. The city of LA changed their election cycles to sync up with state and national races in even years, and that totally changed who the electorate was. Historically, during our century of off-year elections, LA elections had been decided by a really low turnout group of people that tended to be whiter, older, and richer than the city as a whole. The higher turnout elections tend to be more diverse, and that, as the kind of LA conventional political wisdom goes, is often a somewhat more progressive electorate.
Steve, I would say that one other thing that's really interesting about District 13, in which, you know, Julia just alluded to in terms of how rare it is for an incumbent to finish second in the primary, is this is also a situation where the incumbent, Mitch O'Farrell, had far more money at his disposal than did Hugo Soto Martinez. According to documents with the City Ethics Commission, Mitch O'Farrell had raised over $600,000. Hugo raised about $330,000. In addition, there was almost $900,000 spent on Mitch O'Farrell's behalf in independent expenditure groups. And we're seeing that again in this round. The two are actually so far pretty close. Mitch O'Farrell has about $200,000. Hugo Soto Martinez has $140,000. And this was back of September 4th. But already, independent groups have spent nearly $1.2 million trying to keep Mitch O'Farrell safe in that seat. It's far more than the approximately $200,000 that's been spent for Hugo. So we are really seeing money potentially playing a very sizable role in this and in other races. And that is very important to think about as we look at how this shakes out and how, and you know, because the goal is to get your people to the polls on Election Day.
All right, shifting gears now to Council District 15. John Ricciardi, this district massively important to LA's economy. It's a more conservative-leaning district. Former police officer Joe Buscaino, the outgoing council member there. He also ran unsuccessfully for mayor. Let's hear from Stephanie Balcazar in that district.
Voting in the past has felt a little bit meaningless, but now with those things like that, I know that especially in my local elections, that votes can cause a healthy impact for the community.
Okay, John Ricciardi, tell us a little bit about each candidate facing off there. This is Tim McCosker and Danielle Sandoval.
Tim McCosker is sort of your quintessentially connected Angeleno. He's been an attorney. He's helmed a nonprofit there. But, you know, his ties to City Hall go back deep. He was the chief of staff to Mayor Jim Hahn nearly 20 years ago. He really knows the ins and outs of political Los Angeles, and he has been highly favored by the connected class. Danielle Sandoval is running as much more of an outsider. She's been a member of various neighborhood councils, community groups, and, you know, whereas Tim McCosker is based in San Pedro, really the heart of the 15th district, she is from the more northern parts of the community. Tim McCosker finished first in the primary, but a lot of people were fairly surprised that he did not win outright, that he was pushed into a runoff by Danielle Sandoval. Now, one thing that's actually very important to mention is, you know, Danielle Sandoval, she had actually gained an interesting bit of momentum, but as Julia's colleague Dave Zonheiser reported, she was also targeted, or she was also reported to have engaged in wage theft in the district from a restaurant that she formerly owned. She had been accused of not paying four different employees. There was a long investigation, and it really snowballed on her. She was, multiple endorsements, including from the Los Angeles Times, that had gone to her were rescinded. I think she's been struggling to regain momentum ever since then.
And by the way, Sandoval has denied those wage theft allegations. What about financial? So financial support, I mean, the fact that this is the port area, you mentioned San Pedro, Wilmington, Harbor City, Harbor Gateway, that area, a very important piece of land in the city of Los Angeles. How much money is going into this race, John?
A lot of money, maybe not as much as in some of the other races, but still significant amounts, and nearly 90% of it is going to Tim McOsker, according to Ethics Commission filings. Again, you know, back through last month, Tim McOsker had almost $350,000. Danielle Sandoval had raised $45,000. And again, the independent expenditures, as we mentioned in the previous segment, District 13, those are also going Tim McOsker's way. Nearly $500,000 has been spent by outside groups to push his candidacy. So it's another factor that just, shows what is lining up for him. Now, again, those who are, those who get the money don't always win, but they often do win. And in this case, the money is going Tim's way.
Well, a lot on the ballot and not much time to fill it out and get it in by Tuesday, November 8th. We've got more, by the way, at kcrw.com/election. I want to thank you both for coming on and talking with us. John Rigardi, city politics reporter over at Los Angeles Magazine. Julia Wick, Metro reporter over at the LA Times. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Thanks for having us. Always a pleasure.
And one more note about District 5 now, and one of the more high-profile council members to grace the dais at City Hall. Rosalind Weiner Wyman was the youngest council member ever elected in L.A. at the age of 22. And in the 1950s, alongside L.A. County Supervisor Kenneth Hahn, she was instrumental in bringing the Dodgers from Brooklyn to Los Angeles.
It was really very important for the city. So many people don't realize when you didn't have a major league team, we weren't big league in the world, or we weren't big league in America.
Roz Wyman was big league on the LA City Council. She'll forever be known for helping bring the Dodgers here. But politics, as they say, is local, and she lost her seat in 1965, reportedly at the time because of the displacement of Mexicans and Mexican Americans living at Chavez Ravine to make way for Dodger Stadium. She stayed active in politics almost until the end. Roz Wyman died late yesterday at her home in L.A. at the age of 92. We're back in a moment.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Onward now with Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Transitioning out of incarceration can be really, really hard. Finding meaningful work or finding any job at all. Well, one local group is dropping, spinning, and mixing as a way to help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, I can find a little help for my pain. All I need is my brother. Find a little help for my pain.
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Give a Beat is a local organization whose mission is to, quote, use the power of music as a pathway to healing and opportunity for those impacted by the criminal justice system. Training in music production, engineering, even DJing. And with us now to talk about that pathway is Lauren Siegel. She is the co-founder of Give a Beat. Lauren, welcome to Greater LA.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks for having us here.
So give us a little overview of Give a Beat. I mean, this is outreach in and out of correctional facilities. Who are you serving and how are you doing that?
Well, we are utilizing the catalytic power of music to address mass incarceration on a big picture. Folks who are swept into the criminal justice system, whether they're youth, adults, or they're getting out of the system and they're still on parole and under control of the criminal justice system, all can benefit from the power of music. We use it as a tool for healing and opportunity. So in our program, there's healing aspects like self-expression, creative expression, breaking down barriers between different groups. And then, of course, opportunity. There's real skills. We're teaching DJing and music production that can lead to, you know, real jobs and opportunity for folks who are currently incarcerated and are going to be released or formerly incarcerated.
I want to get into the weeds a little bit. You know, like in this program, you're teaching DJing techniques and production techniques and all of that. What goes in sort of to the day to day?
Well, let's take, for example, our program is called On a New Track. It's a reentry mentoring program. 8 people who have, you know, been in the system, who are formerly incarcerated, they come through different member organizations. For example, we're just about to start our second session of On a New Track in partnership with Anti-Recidivism Coalition, which so members come through that through the program who are interested in learning these skills. We have our teaching artists. We also have mentors from the LA community, professional producers and DJs who can come in and work one-to-one with the folks in the program, and learning these different technical skills and really complicated, obviously, you know, complicated software programs like Ableton Live. We have an amazing example of this woman. Her name is Jerry. She had been incarcerated for many years and she hadn't worked with these types of computer programs before. And she just stuck with it. And we just really helped her along what she already had in herself. I think that's one of the messages we want to get out here is that folks who are coming out of prison have already been through hell. You know, they've already overcome the most incredible obstacles. Imagine folks, you know, incarcerated for long periods of time, what it takes, you know, spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, to sort of kind of overcome those obstacles and barriers and that suffering and come out on the outside just ready to change the world. So really all we have to do is just be there, be supportive, help remove barriers, and just help people help navigate the system that, as you probably know, when they get out, there's so many other barriers, you know, to just get back on your feet. So that's where, you know, we come in. And it's just one of those things where everybody can participate. We all can do something about it. We just have to be there, support people when they get out, help them pursue their dreams. They've got everything that it takes inside to attain their goals and dreams.
In addition to all of this, you recently launched a record label as well.
Yes. So this is fun. This is very KCRW. So back to Jerry, because she's just this incredible inspiration for us. Jerry Free, it's her artist name. Jerry Free, who's 61 years old, just released her first track on Give a Beat Records. It's called Pure Joy. And it's a song that's really important for these times. It's about waking up every day and making a choice to live in gratitude and to find joy.
Wow. Yeah. There is something about gratitude, right? Waking up and being grateful for what you do have. What is it, Lauren, about music that you think is so inspirational, that brings people together, that's healing in so many different ways?
I think music is this tool that can do things that no other medium that I'm aware of can do. I mean, you're exactly right, Steve. It brings people together. It breaks down barriers. I've seen this in the juvenile hall, you know, in a group room for girls who have been through trauma and they're in a juvenile hall and you start talking about music and playing music and those walls just come down. And I think music is just this amazing tool that we all have. We can all understand and relate to. And in this troubled world where we don't know what tomorrow looks like, the now is so important, just being in the now. And if we can use music for that moment where people can feel that feeling of liberation, and I just think that's where it's at. And I'm just going to keep doing this because I've witnessed it. And it's just amazing. And I'm so grateful that we're getting to do this.
We certainly wish you the best of luck in doing it. Lauren Siegel from Give a Beat, thanks for coming on and speaking with us about it. And good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
And the beat goes on. That's going to do it for us today. Next week, we celebrate Halloween. It's already the end of October, my goodness. And we honor the departed with Dia de los Muertos, including a closer look at altar builders at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. They have 24 hours to build their art, one day to display it, and then 2 hours to break it down. We'll talk about it next week right here on Greater LA. Go to kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast, too, at kcrw.com/GLA, or just grab the podcast pretty much anywhere. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time, attention, and your ear. Have a great night.